Today's audio cast for Monday, September 4th, 2006 is made possible by Aviation Safety, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention. I'm Mike Blakeney reporting for AvWeb's Audio News. If your clearances are a little clipped, your handoffs a little brisk, it could be the controller working your flight is a little hot under the collar. The collar he or she likely now has to wear while at work. Now, it's hard to tell if the agency was sending a message to the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, NATCA, or whether senior brass were oblivious to organized labor's affinity for this particular statutory holiday. But the FAA's choice to impose hated new work rules on the Labor Day weekend was not lost on the union. It's like getting fired on Christmas. It's the worst punch in the gut blow to the morale of this workforce imaginable, said NATCA President Pat Foray. Foray says the union's position is very simple. It does not consider the imposed work rules, which include a dress code, to be valid because they were not negotiated and have not been ratified by the NATCA membership. In the end, the practical impact of the new regime could be significant. NATCA appears determined to fight each and every violation of the new rules cited by the management. In a memo to controllers at a major center, we know which one, union leaders are urging members to exercise their rights to the letter. The memo reads, if a supervisor tries to talk with you regarding the way you are dressed, it constitutes a formal meeting. Stop the conversation immediately and ask for a union representative. The same approach should be used on any other changes in working conditions. Ask for a rep immediately. The agency has a legal obligation to comply, so says the memo. Meanwhile, in Lexington, site of the deadliest crash on U.S. soil in years, the unidentified tower manager was apparently trying to solve a staffing shortage by shifting responsibility for radar control of aircraft when Flight 5191 crashed off the end of the airport's GA runway. According to the New York Times, the FAA issued a memo to managers 9 months ago specifying that towers with operative radar consoles be staffed by a minimum of two controllers, one to monitor the radar and one to look out the windows. A single controller was on duty the morning of the crash, in seeming defiance of that rule, but it apparently wasn't for lack of trying. Internal documents obtained by the Times revealed that the manager, for whatever reason, didn't have the people to comply with the memo, so he was trying to offload radar responsibility to an Indianapolis center that handles mainly high-altitude traffic. His request was turned down. After the crash, the FAA quickly assigned a second controller to the midnight shift at Lexington, even though the airport generally handles about six flights during that time period, some of them early morning departures. The Lexington tragedy had reporters all over the country phoning their local airports trying to determine if such a catastrophe could happen in their town. In Akron, Ohio, the local paper discovered that Akron-Canton Regional Airport had only one set of eyes looking out for air traffic in the wee hours, but was assured by the FAA that it was okay. FAA spokesman Tony Molinaro said that at midnight, radar responsibility shifts to Cleveland Center. If the radar isn't up, there's no reason for someone to be standing there, he said, adding it's a waste of taxpayers' money. Interestingly, Akron-Canton has about 12 flights during the early morning hours compared to Lexington's six or so. FAA Administrator Marion Blakey said the crash of Comair Flight 5191 may have been avoided if the CRJ-100 had been equipped with Automatic Dependent Surveillance Broadcast, ADS-B. Blakey told reporters at a news conference at UPS's headquarters in Louisville that the ADS-B's LCD screen, not unlike a host of vastly more affordable products currently available to the private pilot, tells pilots which runway they're on and that might have alerted the crew in time to avert the disaster. The heading indicator on the dinner plate-sized flat panel display didn't. Blakey was in Louisville to tout ADS-B as the next-generation air navigation system, something UPS has already committed to. AOPA is a big supporter of ADS-B as long as it includes free weather and traffic information and the cost of the electronics is reasonable. AOPA's government affairs expert Andy Cibula told an industry day on ADS-B hosted by the FAA last week. AOPA has worked on ADS-B for more than a decade and is convinced it will improve safety and utility for GA pilots and reduce costs for the FAA, if it is developed and implemented correctly, according to AOPA's Andy Cibula. He says it's understood that ADS-B will eventually become the minimum equipment standard for flying in controlled airspace, but before that happens, AOPA wants a nationwide system to have been in place for 10 years before it becomes mandatory. AOPA is calling on the FAA to guarantee that the wealth of information that a pilot can obtain through the system, like weather and traffic data, doesn't come at a price. A Cincinnati pilot hopes to become the first to touch down in a light sport aircraft in all 48 contiguous states later this month, but it's the worried parents of sick children who will benefit. Preston Bentley, 26, who works at Blue Ash Aviation and Charter, will fly a T2 Sky Scooter on the epic 8,000 nautical mile flight, which he hopes to finish in 30 days. Along the way, he'll be trying to raise money for Cincinnati's Ronald McDonald House, one of 259 comfortable places for families of sick children to stay when the kids are in the hospital away from home. Bentley said he wanted to do something good for this world and to see and experience as much of it as possible in the process. The FAA issued an emergency airworthiness directive on Friday, ordering operators of all Beech 1900s to inspect wings for cracks. The AD came after reports of cracks in two 1900s. No accidents have been reported. Beech spokesman Mike Turner told Associated Press that the company had already notified owners and most of the 350 aircraft generally used for short-haul commuter flights had already been inspected. It's not known if any more cracked wings were found. According to the AD, the cracks found in the two 1900s were significant, and in one of the aircraft may have occurred after the detailed inspection that is required after 17,500 hours. What seems to enthusiastic onlookers like one of the longest aircraft development programs, Seawind, hit a major milestone last week with the first certification test flight of a Seawind amphib built at the factory in Quebec. Details of the flight weren't released, but until this flight, all other Seawinds, including the well-worn demo plane flown from airshow to airshow, were built from kits. The company now says it hopes to have Transport Canada certification for VFR within 4 months. IFR and other certifications will follow, including Full Authority Digital Engine Control, FADEC, on the big Continental 550 that rests on a pylon protruding from the tail. Avimco Insurance is offering new pilots up to 10% off premiums, including non-owner coverage, if they learn to fly in a Cessna Pilot Center training program. Avimco says the Cessna program goes beyond the FAA minimums for flight training, and that's a cornerstone of its incentive program. Students get a 5% discount just for enrolling. Completing the course extends the discount another year, and if the student also takes a practical risk management course from King Schools, the discount is 10%. The incentive is part of Avimco's Safety Rewards Program, started in 2002, and Jim Lowerman, Avimco's Vice President of Insurance Operations, said the results are encouraging. Lowerman said that with 3 years of solid claims data, there is no question this program has helped to reduce accidents and stabilize insurance premiums. He added that underwriting results are better for customers who have participated in one or both aspects of the program. Astronauts who make the next foray to the moon will go and return in much the same way as their predecessors did, but they might be more comfortable. Last week, NASA awarded a $3.9 billion contract to Lockheed Martin to build the next generation spacecraft to replace the space shuttle that look and function a lot like the Apollo capsules of 30 years ago. Gone are the wings and other aerodynamic surfaces in favor of heat shields and parachutes in a reusable craft called Orion that will go to the International Space Station and the moon after the space shuttle is retired. A bizarre incident aboard an Air Canada Jazz flight last week has raised questions about just how terror-proof these new bulletproof and apparently only semi-pilot-proof cockpit doors are. With 30 minutes left in the flight from Ottawa to Winnipeg, the captain left the cockpit to use the washroom in the rear of the CRJ-100. When he got back, the door lock had apparently malfunctioned and he was unable to get back to his post. Now, the first officer was up front and fully capable of landing the plane, but the captain apparently insisted on being in his seat. In front of 50 passengers, he and the cabin crew popped the hinges on the door. It's not known if the door was left that way for the remainder of the flight, but the relative ease with which the door was removed raised questions about the practical security of the flight crew. Find all these stories and more online today at avweb.com. Comments on this podcast are always welcome. Just email us at audionews@avweb.com. This report was sponsored by Aviation Safety, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention. For more information, click on the AudioCast sponsors link. Look for AvWeb's next AudioCast on Friday, September 8th. I'm Mike Blakeney. Thanks for downloading AvWeb's Audio News.